Staying on that subject, in your character Beatty, the chief, and I know you grew up in Waukegan in Illinois, yeah. and he kind of reminds me. I mean, he's not a one-dimensional man. He has read, he's informed, he knows the foibles of mankind. He seems almost like a very wise, canny Irish politician.
I think there's a lot of that in him, and I think this. Rather than quote from my play, I might as well tell you about Beatty. I've written a play on Fahrenheit 451, which I produced on the stage many times in the last 30 years. And then I've written an opera, which has been performed all over the country. It has been in New York recently. But when I was writing those plays, Captain Beatty came to me as a character and said, "Hey, in your novel, you didn't put this truth about me or that truth." I said, "Well, what truth are you talking about?" He said, "Well, don't you want to find out why I burn books? We know that I do, but there's no reason given in the novel." I said, "Okay, tell me, and I'll write it down and put it in the play." So Beatty went into a long dialogue for me in which he said, "Look, we all grow up with a love of books, and we think that a certain book at a certain time can save our life. We're 13 years old, and we read a book, and we run to our friends, and we say, 'Oh, my God, you got to read this, because it's the best book ever written.' And that lasts maybe for a year or 2 years, and then you find another book. Maybe it's the Bible, huh? And you go to your friends and say, 'Oh, you got to read this, because this is fantastic, and it saved your life even more than the last book.' Then when you're 21, maybe you've given up on the Bible and you find Aldous Huxley or Krishnamurti or some philosopher. And then you go, you're Technocracy Incorporated, you become a politico, huh? And a mad fool. And then crises begin to happen in your life. Maybe a friend commits suicide. Your mother is sick, dies of cancer. Your father is sick, and he may be out of work, and maybe he doesn't die, but he grows old overnight, huh? And maybe you have a bad love affair. And you look in your books, and suddenly the pages are empty, huh? They can't, only up to a point can a book help you. We must love books, but we must never think that a book by itself, we have to have other things. We have to save ourselves. We do the job. And then a good friend or a good lover can help us sustain ourselves against the cruelties of life." Well, what happened to Beatty, of course, is a bad love affair and a mother who died of cancer, a father who got all these things, friendships that dissolved. And he looked in the books and said, "Wait a minute, they can't help me anymore, huh? Well, to hell with them. If they can't help me, I'll kill them, huh? I'll kill the books." So Beatty became a book burner, huh? And that's not in the novel. I'm so sorry I didn't think at the time and make that speech and put it in. It may very well be that I'll have enough courage, or I don't know how to describe it. It would be an act against the book to do it. And I don't believe a writer should interfere with his younger self. But that speech is so powerful, the reason for him doing it, that I'll be tempted to insert it into the book in some future edition. Then later in the play, he takes Montag to his apartment, which is not in the book. They walk in, and Beatty presses a button, and the shelves move aside, and there are 1,000 books there. And Montag says, "My God, you're the fire chief. You're the book burner. What are these books doing here?" He says, "Montag, it's no crime to have books. It's a crime to read them." He says, "I've got all these books here. It's my harem. I'm a sultan. I never touch. So the irony is having all these books here, but they've never been opened. Well, I got to put that in the novel somewhere someday, maybe, too. Yeah.
there's this point, you make this wonderful point in the book, before we get into it, where Mildred is fluffing the pillows, Beatty's in the house trying to find out why Montag is sick, and she's fluffing the pillows, and of course Montag has the book in the bed. In that sense of taking a book to bed, can you talk, and is that something, because I mean, obviously he has the book in bed, it's hidden in bed, and he's in bed with a book. And it's such a common phrase.
That's right, yes.
Did this happen to you as a child? I mean, I know you read and read and read, but was that sense of the book and you in bed?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to consider the functions of books in our life, that you grow up with two pillows and a book in bed, huh? And that when you fluff the pillows, then you fluff the book too. And the security, the book is your security blanket during the night. And if you should ever need courage, you can turn on the flashlight under the covers and gain courage from the book, huh? So it was only natural that at a certain point in writing Fahrenheit 451, I had Montag hide a book behind some cushions where he had been resting in the living room before the fire chief showed up. And the suspense in the scene comes from the fact that at any moment the fire chief might discover there's a book in bed there. And Mildred discovers the book, and her hand freezes on it behind the pillow, and you have to wait to see if she's going to pull it out and give the game away. So I hadn't thought of that much, but I realized the reason behind it is probably the fact I never went to bed when I was a kid, especially when I was sick, without not just one book lying there, but six or seven.
And there's also the great triangle too between Montag, Mildred, and the book. I mean, there is a love triangle in this.
That's
book.
Right. That's right. Yeah, of course, she's secretly jealous of his love affair with all these books, and with a growing and unsuspected and secret love affair with the girl next door. Huh? It's never, you don't talk about it, but when I did the play, I made it a little bit more explicit, because she was such a wonderful, sappy, romantic, intelligent girl who taught him about books without really quite realizing it. And this is one of the flaws with the motion picture, which Truffaut did in later years. He cast the girl next door much too old. He had Julie Christie playing the role. Well, it shouldn't be a grown woman that teaches Montag about books. It should be a girl who doesn't really quite know what she's doing. And her joy in reading and books is so infectious that he begins to be curious. How can one be so happy doing this forbidden thing? So that makes him curious, and he becomes a student. So the fun comes from that situation then, of a sappy romantic girl teaching an older man, not an older woman. No, that's no fun. And in my opera and my staging, I always am positive of getting a 16-year-old girl who's irresistible. I had a thing like this happen recently. A young man at UCLA is going to do a play of mine, and he came to the house. He's 20 years old. And I gave him a copy of my script, Leviathan 99. And he kissed it and crushed it to his bosom. And, you know, it made me so happy, so joyful. He was Clarice suddenly, huh? And I wanted to grab him and kiss him because he was so gorgeous in his being so young and so full of enthusiasm instead of having his finger up his nose, huh? Yeah.